Good morning and welcome to the roundtable and to our panel this morning. It is Friday and it is very nice to have you with us. Let me introduce our panel to you. First and foremost, WAMC's Alan Shartok is in the house. Good morning, Alan.
Hello, I hope my microphone is working.
Your microphone is working. You sound great. And if not, we'll just give you one of the other ones we have here. University at Albany professor and investigative journalist Rosemary Armeo is
good
in the
morning.
House. Good morning. And newsman Ray Graff is here.
How's my microphone sounding?
You're sounding very good.
Okay, good, good.
Yeah, you're doing a little Mel Torme there.
Sure, yeah.
Yeah, that sounded good. We welcome your comments as always. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. And we would love to hear what you think on the many issues that we will discuss this morning. There is a lot going on, as there always is. And I shouldn't say there always is. There are days where I'm like, oh my God, I have to find something.
Yeah.
But today.
That's when we rely on a rant from Rosemary about luggage handling.
Yeah,
or something. We're off to the races, really.
That's what I just put in TSA, and I'll say, all right, Rosemary will do 20 minutes on this. This is great. Let's start with the Christie story, because I think this is really interesting on, two major fronts anyway. And let's start with the fact that Governor Christie's lawyers report that the bridge traffic jam was politically motivated and the governor had no role. Political motivations were at the heart of a plan by allies of New Jersey Governor Chris Christie to spark a massive traffic jam on the George Washington Bridge, according to an internal report prepared by lawyers on behalf of Governor Christie. So I guess issue number one is that, Atlin, it does not seem to take a rocket scientist to figure out that if you are doing your own internal review, you're probably going to come out of it looking pretty good.
No question about it. You hire, this is done all the time by big corporations and others. You hire a friendly lawyer. He comes in and he stands up and it really sounds like a broadcast. He says, absolutely not. He had nothing whatever to do with it. Meantime, the New York Times this morning is really after him.
Well, that was the second issue I wanted to bring up, because you've been talking about this since this story broke, about how the Times is out for blood here.
Or a Pulitzer, yeah.
Good point. Let me just real quick, since you brought it up, their headline this morning is not about the internal review. It is report details claim by ally Christie knew of bridge lane closing. So that's their bent on this. Go ahead.
Well, don't get me wrong. The Times happens to be doing a terrific job in this case. And the idea of the hypocrisy of the Christie people, because remember, there are still these people who are taking the Fifth Amendment, the people who have been really accused of setting the whole thing up. Their issue is, I'm sure, that when it comes down to the final question, there's going to be, did you tell the governor or not? Did anybody tell the governor? And by the way, there has been testimony that people have let the governor know. And if that is true, would you like a little reduced sentence in order to do this? And then I think that's when it's all gonna come out.
Rosemary, what do you think?
I read the article and I thought how smart it was to have your own lawyer get out there first,
right?
Because it allows an opening, and indeed he's giving his first news conference in days and weeks today because he feels safe. It lays out the defense that he will make should something come of this in the real investigations, the ones not being done by his
legislative
office.
Committee,
right.
and the
and he's going to simply forget or not recall being told anything about this.
I think
the report itself, if you read it, what the lawyer came out with, has some stuff in it that's pretty damning.
I thought the same thing.
Why is he happy about this? It doesn't look really great in there that he forgot. Things happened that should not have, and he didn't remember it or forgot about it.
Isn't this a hard, like, you can't have it both ways in
Correct.
The sense of, I'm going to be a leader who has my hand on everything. I'm going to be I'm going to be in control.
I didn't know I hired bad people.
And then all of a sudden say, I didn't know anything about this.
I didn't know what they were doing.
And
right.
then when we talk about bad people, Alan, the one person that they particularly went after was David Wildstein, who worked for the governor and was a longtime political ally. And I'm thinking as the lawyer is going off, well, if you're ticking this guy off, isn't that like bad for your ultimate defense? If indeed there is something here where if you get this guy mad enough, he's just going to tell everything.
Well, apparently that is what they are afraid of. You're exactly right, Joe. And in fact, there is some indication. Remember, they've all been writing about this memorial service, I guess, at the World Trade Center, where the Ground Zero, where somebody told the governor what was going on. And yes, I think, you know, this has got to be handled with great equanimity. And, you know, you've gotten at least three of his closest friends really angry at him. And they know that.
Well, I think his strategy is laid bare in this. He does think that Bridget Kelly and the guy at the authority are going to be the main testimony against him. Now he's setting it up that, they're getting time off. They're going to get a reduced sentence. They're just angry. We discount them. That's plainly what he's going after. I don't think he'll care.
I watch House of Cards. That doesn't always work.
Well, there'll be a press conference today, and he'll answer questions probably for an hour or two, and I think we'll find out.
Or three.
Or, like three, the last one in January, and that's why he only does them every couple of months now. Because, frankly, they would run into each other if he did them any closer together. But anyway, there'll be one this afternoon, and I think a lot of questions similar to the ones you guys are posing will be asked.
And Alan, you were going to say?
Speaking of the House of Cards, the Times goes out, and apparently in this thing, it finds out, and I think in the report, that two of the principals are having a love affair, which gets closed down right before this all happens. And the idea is given to us by the lawyer that maybe there's retribution here going on somehow.
So talk
about House of Cards.
Yeah, right? I mean, it's Mr. Wildstein, Ms. Kelly, and Bill Stepien, the former Christie campaign official to whom Ms. Kelly, it was suggested, was romantically linked. All refused, obviously, to be interviewed for the internal report, raising questions about its thoroughness. And that's the other thing. Half the people that are involved that you're trashing, you never talk to in the internal report.
Right. That's a really good point. And also the cost of it, $1 million. I want to know cuts in school lunches in New Jersey. Yeah. And we're spending $1 million on this.
What if you didn't
talk
to
by taxpayers, people? Alan. Right.
Right.
Yeah, right.
Well, what are you paying for $1 million?
Here's what I take away from this.
Yes.
My lawyer is going to do my next employee review. It's going to work out really well. Really well.
By the way, Ray, it's not a bad idea.
No, I think it's actually writing it down.
It's 250,000 pages of documents and interviews of more than 70 individuals. So that is what they did, although the people who were actually involved they didn't talk to. And the report failed to resolve a central question: what motivated this is a New York Times quote, the ham-handed lane closings.
Oh, that's unfortunate.
But he sounded, I mean, the thing about, if you listen to the lawyer and you listen to Mastro and you listen to the way he presented it, he really sounded, what's the proper political science word? Like a jerk.
Well, smug, right?
Yeah.
Very smug.
He did. You know, maybe we're not emphasizing the point that Alan and Joe are both making about how ridiculous this study was. It didn't talk to a lot of people. MSNBC pointed out how the tone through the whole thing was that the lane closings were real, although there's no evidence or, you know, there was a real reason for it. It talks throughout the report as if the study for the lane closings was ongoing. It's quite interesting.
And by the way, makes the complainers, you know, the mayors and all the rest,
right,
look like the bad guys.
Right.
It's unbelievable.
Right. That's true. That's true.
That's absolutely true. And I was like, well, my God, haven't they been through enough? And you're going to make them into the evil ones here. But I have to say, and this is sort of a media project tangent for a second. But last night when I was going through and looking for stories, I have Yahoo as my homepage, and Yahoo had the thing, their main story on their main news story was Christie cleared in bridge probe.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, wow. You know, and that is...
You can't buy advertising like that.
Right. Christie cleared in bridge probe. And I thought that is maybe being a little overly optimistic.
Cleared by his lawyer.
Yeah. That's right. Cleared by his lawyer.
Christie's wife agrees. You know.
We're going to take a break. We'll talk about other issues when we come back. We welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org. We'll be back right after this.
Support for WAMC comes from High Meadow School, Stone Ridge, New York, hosting a Sustainable Living Fest Saturday, March 29th, with masterclasses, kids' demos, local foods, world music concerts, and more, highmeadowschool.org. Oblong Books, proud to be a presenting partner of the Read Local Red Hook Literary Festival, Saturday, April 12th, 10 a.m. to 9 p.m. in Red Hook Village, oblongbooks.com. And Hudson Valley Foot Associates, podiatric physicians and surgeons treating foot problems with offices in Ulster, Dutchess, Columbia, Orange, and Delaware counties, hvfa.com.
Really good music today.
Yeah,
this is Jake Shimabukuro, who is a ukulele virtuoso, and he is going to be at the Egg on Sunday at 7:30, and it's part of their American Roots and Branches series at the Egg. And we had some technical trouble. We were supposed to have Jake on the show.
Right.
Had some technical troubles, and but we just wanted to have you hear some of this incredible music, so we'll be playing it throughout the hour this morning.
That's cool.
It's Jake Shimabukuro, and again, he'll be at the Egg on Sunday.
You don't
at
get to hear
7:30.
I'll have to see if there's tickets. Remember, I'm trying to get to my first
egg
performance.
Event. Yes,
you don't get to hear ukulele versions of Queen songs all that often.
Not enough
in
life.
That's pretty amazing.
Nope, not enough in life. You're absolutely right. All right, so we move on and we go to other issues before we head over to a our news break, and I guess we'll quickly touch on the search for the missing jet. We're now entering a month, I believe.
Wow.
Today marks a month. And Australia announced on Friday that it had moved the search area for Malaysia Airlines Flight 370 nearly 700 miles to the northwest, the latest in a long series of changes by the authorities on where they think the plane might have disappeared. I believe the latest news out about an hour ago is that the planes and the vessels that are there have found a field of debris. And so they're and that is at the site that this new site that they said that they were moving.
They've
the
calculate
search
it. Mm-hmm.
And so they are acting on further analysis from radar. And it's really interesting. I think this is an interesting part of the story, is that really how it may take a while, but when the there is a point where technology kicks in and we get really good information and it starts to
it's become a science story.
Yes.
Yeah, well, it only took a month to get the information. So, I mean, if someone was alive for a couple of days, all our science did no good.
Well, I don't know if that's fair. I mean, I think some of it takes longer. I mean, obviously, a lot of things failed here. The radar, the detectors, all of that stuff, that all seemed to have failed, obviously. But using this radar data, using all of this other information, and as Rosemary says, having it become a science story and looking at the data obviously takes time, and isn't a perfect scenario, but in this case, you know, seems to be working. Does that make sense?
No, it's not. They don't have the plane. When they have the plane, I'll say it worked.
Okay.
And then we'll say, okay, it took 6 weeks to get to find the plane, and everyone's dead. So it really didn't work.
Well, if they've got the if they've got the debris, that's different from everything else, which has all been, you know, gobbledygook and conjecture, including the scientific stuff. But if they're now saying they actually have the debris, that's pretty definitive, don't you think, Ray?
They have debris. I didn't hear it's the debris.
Yeah, in fact, one aspect of the story is that our oceans are apparently filled with garbage.
And yeah,
they've been misreading flotsam and jetsam and junk floating in the ocean for what might have been plane parts. That's kind of scary.
I wonder, though, about I think the story has so many ebbs and flows, because right now we're still worried about, you know, we're very much focused on
where we are with the debris field and the site and that stuff, all of the questions that we were talking about a week or two ago about the pilots and, you know, did the plane land and their...
Where were they going?
Where were they going? What was happening? That has sort of taken a back seat and I guess in hopes that they will be able to recover the plane, recover the black box, and yeah. get and answer some of the questions. That
still
have.
Seems very remote even if this is finally the right spot. And they know where the plane went down or can figure that out. The boxes are now extremely deep down.
23,000-ish feet.
And they've been there a while too.
Yeah.
Well, that's the problem. Alan, when you look at a story like this and an investigation, and as you say, I mean, you know, you have the fields of debris, but this is a story that really is one that people are continued to be interested in. They want to know what happened, and it's still bringing us along because it's still a great mystery. A month
you
out.
And you want to know why? Because every one of us who's ever flown in an airplane thinks this could happen to us, potentially. I mean, there's some of that, isn't there? Or am I off a little wacko on this?
No, I think you're right.
We all project ourselves into this. And say, you know, what if we get on a plane and, you know, like Charlie on the MTA and never return?
I think that is part of it. I know I think about that when I get on planes. There's other parts just missing. Like, how come we haven't heard from any of the relatives or friends of the pilot? You know, that's something that I would have expected a long time ago.
They had
some coworkers talking about who was very dedicated.
I thought that the brother of the pilot was coming out of his house and he talked and he said, you know, that they're, but I mean, nothing.
I don't know. I don't even know that.
Yeah, that was a while ago. Okay. But anyway, we're going to take a break and we're going to go and get a news update from NPR. When we come back, Alan will read us some letters. We welcome your comments as well. Roundtable at WAMC.org, roundtable at WAMC.org. We will also handle some other big topics today, including the Twitter ban in Turkey, questions about the Texas abortion law, and, oh, the good old favorite story about lawmaker stipends in the state of New York.
Ah.
So those stories and more coming up. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. We welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org, roundtable at WAMC.org, where we get letters like this one.
Right, Joe, and my thing is collapsing right before.
Great
Yuki stuff. I'm a guitar guy myself. Your regular theme always reminds me of a stripper number.
Well, yes, that's why we like it.
That's where we got it.
and a lot more than that.
I need
and
to then, listen more closely.
And then we heard. We heard from our regular correspondent Julius, who said that the Christie people are following the Goebbels rule. Unfortunately, I forgot what the Goebbels rule was. Does anybody else know?
Yeah,
is it deny, deny, deny?
If you tell people a lie often enough,
they
eventually come to believe it.
Right. So there was that one. And let's see, was there anything
else?
There
was one from William Donovan on flight reporting.
Yeah, I got it right here. The flight reporting has been done, particularly this morning, on three different stations, including your show, lead to conspiracy theories because no one is mentioning this change in relation to the past report of the 133 objects. So what about that other report of all those objects seeing what was that? It just seems like it's lazy reporting and no one's asking the hard questions.
I think when you're out in the middle of the Indian Ocean and it's so tough, everyone who's been out there says it's tough to get out there on a good day and the weather's very unpredictable. They might not even know what some of this stuff is. They might not have gotten there yet.
Well, and as we said, there's a lot of garbage.
I agree with him. I think that is. I'd like to know what this stuff
but
is.
But I think people are asking the hard questions. It's just going to take some time to figure
to
out what
the
stuff
answers,
is. Yeah.
Right.
And then there's Jetliner.
Karen Schriefter wants to know about when are we going to have some good, hard journalistic reporting on the on the closing of North Adams Regional Hospital, which is another whole
story. Well, we certainly have done a huge Jim Lavulis has been all over that story and has done some wonderful coverage. And if you go to WAMC.org, you can hear that, and it'll be more today, of course.
And if you read my column in the Berkshire Eagle this Saturday, you're going to see what my thoughts are on that.
Excellent. And then also you have, there should be a letter from Michael right here. I'm pointing to it right there.
You go right ahead.
All right. It says, can't these planes fly low and take some high resolution photos of the debris to identify it? And I think that's exactly what they're trying to do. But again, the weather conditions are not always
cooperative. It was icing yesterday and high winds and rain. And
yeah, I don't think we have a really clear idea of just how remote and bad this area is in the world. It's not close to anything. It's like something out of a novel about the end of the world.
But this is the kind of stuff that leads to conspiracy theories. There's no two ways about it. Everybody wants to think something may be going on, and maybe it is. Who knows?
So speaking of conspiracy theories, let's talk about Turkey and Twitter. A Turkish government ban on Twitter has provoked widespread fury in the country and condemnation around the world, with the country's own president taking to the social media website to condemn the actions.
Which he brought about.
Turkey's prime minister, who blames social media for fueling anti-government rhetoric, threatened to eradicate Twitter at a campaign rally on Thursday. Within hours, Turkish internet users were reporting widespread disruptions to the service and hashtags including Twitter is blocked in Turkey, and they were trending worldwide. So I think this is an interesting point of if we talk about the power of social media in uprisings and in unrest throughout the world, that how vulnerable is it and can it ultimately be switched off?
It's not just Twitter now. YouTube has also been shut down in Turkey. And the truth is that the internet is vulnerable in these countries. We've seen Cuba controls very much the internet there because they're the service provider. If you want internet, you go through the government. That's handy. The same is true. Egypt shut down, managed to shut down the internet for a while. Iran has done it. One of my Iranian students pointed out that the action in Turkey happened shortly after the prime minister returned from a state trip to Iran, as if he had gotten the idea from there. Other places have tried it. The problem is the internet and news is now global, so that when you shut down the Twitter feeds from Turkey, the news is still getting out. There are Turks everywhere in the world. We have a huge population of Turks in the United States. They're all throughout Europe. Those people are outside of the area that's controlled by the Turks. So it's just self-defeating.
And by the way, Rosemary, I think you may have gotten one little thing misconstrued. The president, from the very beginning, the president has been objecting to this. The prime minister is the one who did it. So I think that the president was smart enough to get on the right side, early on this. But it also shows you where the locus of power is.
You are. That's really true. And I did conflate that all. The truth of the matter, though, is that they do not believe the law could have passed without the approval of all of those in the top government.
Yeah.
So he didn't win many points by coming out and saying, oh, yeah, I think that's a bad idea.
Yeah, but he was smart enough to get there fast.
Yeah, you're right.
That government has
been in trouble already. There were protests against the government all this summer. The Turks are very proud of their democracy. They've worked hard for it. The first pro-Islamic government comes in a long time, and it was seen as really hurting, becoming very dictatorial.
So. Yeah, and exactly. And, it's so interesting, considering what's going on in Egypt right now, that the protectors of democracy in Turkey have always been the military. They've always come out of the barracks when somebody tries to become a dictator. Now it's unclear as to whether or not, with the new pro-Islamic, formation of the government, whether the military is doing the same thing that it did all those years since Ataturk, founded the secular republic.
And of course, the whole interest of this is that Turkey had been held up by the United States, too, as a model for the kind of democracies that could be set up in countries with large Muslim populations. And,
sure.
And now it's running into some of the same sorts of tensions.
So what do you make? I'm sorry, Joe, but what do you make of that, Rosemary? The fact that the pro-Islamic people get in Egypt, they get in Turkey, what do you make of that?
I think, you know, the model for this may be Tunisia, which was the first state to have one of these democratic uprisings. They get rid of the guy who had been holding them down and oppressing them and amassing a fortune for 25 years. And then a very pro-Islamic government goes into place. It wasn't an exact majority, but, you know, again, I'm simplifying. And they begin crunching down on things, you know, making the restrictions that we've seen in other Muslim governments. And the people revolted against that. And and that party is the first one now that we've seen that said, okay, we'll hold off on some of the things we really believe in, like oppressing women and no freedom of expression. And they've come out with a constitution this year that is extremely liberal. The hope is that Given enough time, you can see that same sort of thing happening throughout the region, that you end up with a government that's more moderate rather than extreme.
So my question is, real quick, and then we're going to take a break and move on to our last two stories, but how long do you see this lasting?
See what lasting?
Twitter.
I think it will not last longer because you cannot have a total censorship anymore. It's very difficult to do.
And something else will break.
Yeah,
out, right.
Yeah.
I mean, they'll just create something else.
China has more success at it, and Cuba does because its people are so much more isolated, maybe. But there's a huge diaspora of Chinese and of Turkish people around the world, and they are not held to the same restrictions.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our roundtable discussion. We welcome your comments, roundtable at WAMC.org. Ray Graff, Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, we welcome you. Roundtable at WAMC.org. We'll be back after this short break.
Support for WAMC comes from Woodstock Writers Festival, Woodstock, New York, featuring workshops, story slams, panels, and more, April 3rd through 6th. Come along for the read. WoodstockWriters.com. And the Honest Weight Food Co-op, located at 100 Waterfleet Avenue in Albany, offering local and organic produce, groceries, specialty foods, and more. HonestWeight.coop.
Again, the music you're hearing this morning is Jake Shimabukuro, who is a ukulele virtuoso who will be at the Egg on Sunday at 7:30, and great music, and we thank him for that, really good stuff. So let us go on to our remaining topics for this morning, and let's talk about talked about this issue earlier in the week, about a court panel upholding Texas law on abortion. A federal appeals panel on Thursday upheld a Texas law that has forced several abortion clinics in the state to shut down, saying the law did not pose a, quote, undue burden on women's rights. The decision was not unexpected because the appeals court in New Orleans is considered conservative and had previously signaled that it was likely to find the law constitutional.
Yeah, it's not a surprise. And as pro-abortion advocates are saying, this is a case that's going to go to the Supreme Court. We're going to end up in the Supreme Court on abortion again. And it also is one, the Texas law is bad, but as we were discussing in the break, there are several other fights, attacks on abortion in other states that are actually even more extreme. This is part of a process that's been going on since about 2011 to bypass Roe v. Wade and to get restrictions on abortion at the state level.
Similar laws in Mississippi and Wisconsin have been temporarily stayed by federal judges pending appeals, while Mississippi is in the same circuit as Texas. Thursday's ruling may not apply because the circumstances are different. In Mississippi, the doctor requirement could force the state's only abortion provider to close.
In Texas, there were 30 abortion clinics that were affected, all mostly in very poor areas. And they worried about 30, but actually 24 of them have remained open, even with the law in place. So good news, but only temporary, because the new laws will come along. In fact, they're now looking at making any abortion clinic has to live up to the standards of a off-site, a non-hospital-sited surgical center. And that's very difficult to do, too. Expensive.
And Alan, any way you look at it, whether it's Mississippi, Texas, or Wisconsin, this, it seems inevitable it's going to end up in the Supreme Court, right?
Well, it does, and I'm not happy about what I see happening in the Supreme Court.
Right.
As I've said before, you know, we're talking about that traditional 5-4 breakdown. We know four of them are solid against. So the real question is what Kennedy does. And, you know, I personally find this so abhorrent that I don't know what to tell you. I mean, you know, this is a great democracy. We have a 51, 52, 53% women. In this country, and these old men are telling them what to do. It's awful.
It also seems to me, you know, that it's just such a futile battle. The number of abortions is very low in this country. It is being lowered in this country. Do we really need this fight now? I mentioned the other fight that I thought was worse, and that's in Mississippi, where a 16-year-old girl gave birth to a baby. Baby was dead. The cord was wrapped around its neck, and that seemed to be the cause of death. And then they do an autopsy, and they discover cocaine in the baby's body, the fetus's body. And so they have charged this 16-year-old girl, who apparently has substance abuse problems, with murder. Criminalizing pregnant bodies is that's an attack on women. I don't know how conservatives can say women are wrong to get that idea. It's just scary stuff.
It is scary stuff. We're gonna go to our final story in just a second. But before we do that, Alan, you got another letter, I believe, from an earlier topic about Turkey.
Yeah, Jack, JAC, I think your last few rounds on the subject went a bit off the rails. We do not know if Turkey is going to be a democracy yet. The U.S. has, think McCarthy, et cetera, almost gone off the rails more than once, but our fundamental democratic ethic brought it back toward equilibrium. Okay, that's fair.
Yeah, that is fair, and it's true. Turks are extremely proud, as they should be, of what they've done with the government there, and they've even brought military people to trial in the past decade. So
And we also heard from the dress shrinker, who says, I'm down 2 dress sizes in 2 weeks.
Oh, congratulations.
Oh, that's good. That's excellent. Congratulations, and I look forward to seeing what you've picked out in your new size.
Okay.
All right.
And also, we have one fast one from Julia. Thanks for your conversation, but could you please replace pro-abortion with pro-choice? Thanks.
I don't believe in euphemisms. It is pro-abortion.
I'm with you. I mean, it is what it is, mm-hmm. as some great man once said.
Pro-life and pro-choice. How do you pick between that? They both use fake words. I hate it.
Let us, with that said, okay, now you can just hear the letters coming in. Here we go. I'm gonna put the golf ball on the tee and let Alan just swipe this one.
Oh, this is fun. I like this.
Yeah, I like. So, Alan, yeah. I'm gonna set it up and then you just go. All right.
Go.
7 minutes. All right.
Oh.
So, here's me putting the ball on the tee. So, story in the paper in the New York Times: New York legislators economized to stretch their per diem. While in Albany, lawmakers squeeze their stipends, and the big thing now, no receipts.
Well, look, this has been great fun. The Times had a great story on it that we all read, and everybody's clucking about it because apparently they have this sort of motel place.
The Comfort Inn in Glenmont.
And they play poker there. Now, poker is interesting in that it depends on who you're playing poker with. If you're playing with each other, fine. But I remember somebody telling me a long time ago that he played poker with a United States senator, right? Okay, and that he lost a lot. Okay. You get it? You lose a lot if you won something. So they're doing this. The per diem is there. We got one guy who is being accused right now of not showing up and putting in vouchers anyway. Won't be the first time, and like that.
Right.
I didn't hit it too hard, did it?
Oh, no, and one guy. No.
And one Republican announced that what he wants to do is to get rid of all of this stuff about per diems and just build a dormitory where they can all go and be together.
Well, that's great.
And cross fertilize.
Have a little buffet.
Cross fertilize. Nice.
Well, the whole idea, I mean, I wish the state were like that. I wish the university were like that. If you travel, you get a certain amount of money, and you get to keep that money whether you actually spend it or not. So if you stay with a friend, you still can get the reimbursement as if you had to pay for a hotel. Why do we do that? On the other hand, I also think that legislators have not gotten a raise in 6 years. I don't think that's right. I wouldn't want that in my business.
They're
not struggling, but it does lead to an attitude.
Attaboy ring.
It does lead to an attitude of okay, they're not paying me. I'm going to get
don't
it some
do the
other
job.
Way.
Then don't do it.
I'm with Ray on
it's
this.
Okay,
service.
Then who is going to do it? I mean, we have enough trouble.
So what? We have to
wait
do
a second.
Service.
If you had election, first of all, I'm for term limits. I really am. But if you had said to the people, we're going to have you come in here for some states do this for $500 a legislative session, you'd have people volunteering from all over the place. Instead, we have this professional class of politicians who are just make sure that only they can win the IPP, the incumbent protection plan, and they make it harder and harder for other people. That's why we're not going to have campaign finance in this state, because nobody wants. You got a governor with $33 million in his campaign account. You know, he says he's for it, but you know, I'm from Missouri. Show me.
I know more about this than I do, Alan. But
I think I do.
Yes, you do, and I have to defer to that.
Very nice.
However,
here's the questions
that I would ask is, you know, are the problems that we have in our legislature from the salary, or are they from campaign finance and the way politicians are selected to run in New York City?
There are lots of
problems. I don't think it's because of the salary that we pay our legislators.
Right.
Since we are the biggest state, there is a cost of living. I actually kind of want somebody who's going to work full time on my government.
We're the third biggest state, and Texas took us over a while back in California, of course. But, you know, it's an ethic. It is a greed ethic. It's these people think that they can get away with it, and they try it, and it works, and they do it for a long time. And then one day they wake up, and the FBI is at their door, and they say, wait, it worked all the other time.
Well, I like the FBI being there. I like that there's monitoring of this stuff. I think that you don't legislate. You don't make rules for the people who are going to break them. And we have a lot of good legislators, and we would have more, perhaps, if they could make, you know, if they had money for it, if they were paid for what they do.
Alan, you got a couple letters I want to end it with. We got about a minute and a half.
Yeah. Okay, so Eve says, I am absolutely not pro-abortion, but I am pro-choice. That statement was nuts, N-U-T-Z. Eve. Okay, that was Eve. And then we heard from somebody else, but I can't work this thing. Okay, Joe, go ahead. You do it.
Okay, we got a letter from Emily who says, please say pro-choice rather than pro-abortion. No one ever says they are pro-triple bypass surgery, even though it is sometimes a necessary healthcare decision. Also, are we able to distinguish whether what we are talking about, women's healthcare clinics or abortion clinics, do these clinics that may be shut down by new laws really only provide abortions?
This is just political correctness. I don't believe that abortion is a really good thing, and yet I want the choice of it. However, politically, if you're saying you're pro-choice, you are defending the right of women to have abortion. That's pro-abortion.
Well, that's true.
That's
and
it.
We've heard from the wonderful Assemblywoman Deborah Glick. It's been 15 years with a raise for legislators, but we do have, without, I guess it means, But we do have to submit.
Okay.
Yeah, but we do have to submit the travel receipts, just not hotel receipts. But the Thruane bridge tolls are dated. Most people are honest, Deborah. Well, I think she's right, and I think you know that it's infuriating. There are a few, just a few, who ruin it for everybody.
That's true. And legislators actually get warned, like training, that your receipts, your toll receipts, we look at. So don't screw up if you're going to try to take money that you're not really. Make sure it's not on a day that you've gone through the tolls in your head at home.
Right.
So,
yeah.
Yeah.
Training.
Yeah.
Training.
Take side roads.
We're out of time. I want to thank everybody who wrote to us. We love to hear from you, so keep the conversation going. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Rosemary, Ray, Alan, thank you so much. Appreciate it. Have a great weekend, and we'll meet back on Monday.
Yes, we will.
All right.
All right. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Coming up next, the roundtable continues on WAMC.